This time on episode 258 of Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., we'll be discussing The Punisher, Season 1, Episode 2, Two Dead Men, the weekly Marvel news, and your feedback.
I'm Jeannie.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Nikki from Tyrion's Landing,
a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network,
just like the one you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual.
Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in...
3, 2, 1.
You have been granted clearance by Director Alfonso Mack McKenzie. Stand by for a S.H.I.E.L.D. debriefing. All information to be discussed here is classified and may only be discussed among agents granted clearance by the S.H.I.E.L.D. director.
Now it's time for your scheduled debriefing. I'm Director SP.
I'm Agent Haley.
I'm Agent Lauren.
And I'm Consultant Michelle.
Welcome to Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., we're a Marvel Comic Universe fan show. This show is recorded on Sunday, October 14th, 2018, live from the Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. studios and broadcast cemetery-wide via www.geeks.live. Happy National Dessert Day, ladies!
Y'all, I had the best pecan pie yesterday.
Mmm.
Pie.
I had a brownie, a caramelized brownie. It was really good. Probably way too many calories, but it was really good.
I had ice cream, but it wasn't that great.
Did you have the brownie with ice cream?
No, I did not. I probably should have. I do have lactose-free ice cream in the house.
Yeah, I did not have it with lactose-free ice cream, but it was worth it.
Good to know. And we know that you ladies are ice cream fiends.
Yes.
Yes.
I will have to correct the whole brownie ice cream thing later, but
you will.
Not right now. In the meantime, we're going to talk about Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the fact that it's a fan-based podcast on the ABC television show Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the multiple Marvel Netflix series like The Punisher, and the Marvel cinematic and comic book universes in general.
Because of being old enough to know that was a payphone.
If you'd like to talk to us about payphones, you can visit our website, legendsofshield.com.
If you'd like to call us on a payphone, you can get a hold of us at our voicemail, 844-THE-BUS-1. That's 844-843-2871.
I'd like to share those videos of kids not knowing how to operate a regular phone. You can do so on our Facebook page, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Podcast.
You can hit us up on Twitter with all the tweets about payphones on our Twitter handle, at Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D.
You can see our smug faces talking about payphones on youtube.com/gunnageek.
You can tell your Amazon device to enable Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. skill.
And remember, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a proud member of the gunnageek.com network.
Lots of geeky shows on the gunnageek.com network to talk a lot of geeky stuff, but we're going to talk Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. and we're going to talk The Punisher. Now, The Punisher, Season 1, all 13 episodes of it, aired on Netflix November 17th, 2017, and Season 2 is set to air in 2019, so we're a little bit timely. I guess we're not timely on this one. Not timely too bad, anyway. In any case, Lauren, who directed this episode of Punisher?
So the episode was directed by Tom Shankland, who we have discussed on the show before. He has 24 credits starting from 1995, and his episodes include one episode of Iron Fist, one of Luke Cage, three of the Netflix House of Cards, four of Ripper Street, three of Dirk Gently, and as a producer credit, something I am incredibly happy about, The City and the City adaptation, which is listed for 2018. The City and the City is a book by China Mieville, and it's one of my absolute favorites. So whenever that comes out, please check it out. The book is so good, you guys. So good.
And Michelle, who wrote this episode of Punisher?
This episode was written by Steve Lightfoot, has 13 writing credits starting in 2004, including 20 Hannibal. He was also the executive producer. He's consulting producer on Narcos and wrote one episode of that. And he is the creator and executive producer of The Punisher and has written 4 episodes. And The Punisher is based on the Marvel Comics by Jerry Conway, John Romita Sr., and Ross Andrew.
All right, Haley, we often equate the theme of the episode to the title of the episode. This title is Two Dead Men. And what is the meaning of that title and the theme of the episode?
It comes from two things. The easy one is the little limerick that Frank was telling his kids on the ferry, you know, that two dead men stood up to fight thing. And then Frank and Micro are two dead men who are going to be the central storyline going through this episode and on through the series, one presumes. I don't know, because I haven't seen anything beyond this episode.
Yeah, that's important to note. None of us, I believe, have seen any of The Punisher beyond this episode, right, Michelle?
Nope. I'm watching it one at a time.
And Lauren, you're the same way, right?
Ditto. And a correction. Apparently, the City and the City miniseries came out in April. Why didn't I know about this?
Because you were busy working on your books and stuff. We have podcasts that dictate what was going on. None of us have seen beyond this. Matter of fact, none of us have seen beyond this in the entirety of the Netflix series. So we haven't seen Iron Fist. We haven't seen Jessica Jones. We haven't seen any of that stuff. So we are trying to get caught up with Netflix during this great hiatus of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So we're going to start about this episode of Two Dead Men of The Punisher, talking about the fights. And there was a lot of good fights. I mean, this is The Punisher after all. And let's talk about that grueling knockout, drag out fight in Chief Wolf's home. Michelle, what was up with that?
First, I love that it's to Frank Sinatra's Ain't That a Kick in the Head? Because a lot of kicking goes along and a lot of punching and slamming of heads into things and knocking heads with candlesticks or whatever. It's a knockdown, drag out fight between Frank Castle and Wolf, who's the Homeland Security boss. Find out he's responsible for Micro's supposed death, because Micro's leaking information, had to stop that. And wow, it was just brutal. I liked how Wolf, you know, untied himself, but then Frank's like, guns empty.
Yeah, because that was a whole setup for Frank to get the information he needed.
Mm-hmm. It was the kind of Black Widow.
This idiot's giving me everything.
Exactly.
So who called that from the beginning of that scene? Like, as soon as you saw him, like, kind of untying his wrist, you're like, Frank's not that dumb.
Oh, yeah.
When I saw he was tied up with a tie, I was like, no way. I mean, there are so many ways that you can break through a tie. I mean, if you have any sort of sharp edge on a watch or whatever, you can cut through that enough to break loose. So I knew that the Punisher was doing that. The one thing that confused me is why he was flaunting the gun right in front of Wolf in his stomach area, you know, tucked into his belt. And I kind of figured he only had one bullet in there, but I'm like, why would Frank only put one bullet in? I mean, he's the bullet happy, but I guess in this case it worked.
Had to give Wolf this sort of like one-upmanship, like, oh, I am smarter than you. I'm not being played. And Frank's like, yeah, dude, just got played.
Wolf, you're monologuing.
You got me monologuing.
And then he gets his neck snapped.
Yeah, that was, again, I feel bad. I'm sure C. Thomas Howell is a perfectly nice guy in real life, but I don't like him. So I did a little fist pump on the couch and then felt bad.
At least Frank put him back up in the chair, right? Because they found him in the chair, so he wasn't laying on the floor.
Oh, yeah, it was very like Hannibal posed, like, this is my design.
So, Haley, if you're going to rank the fight that happened in the kitchen with, you know, toasters being banged up against heads and candlesticks banging up against heads, I mean, these are two tough guys. Well, how would you rate the fight?
It gets points for having a good and appropriate soundtrack.
Okay, is that how we're ranking fights in the series right now, soundtrack?
No. There's so many different things, but it definitely does gain points for the soundtrack. The choreography was not particularly creative, but was very brutal. So it is very solid.
It makes sense for two military guys. They're not going to have like a lot of fancy style, but it is just going to be brutal.
Yeah, it's not wuxia here. It's just a beatdown.
Yeah.
It's Daredevil beatdown. Well, we don't have to worry about Wolf anymore. However, this brings into question who's really going to be in charge of the New York Department of Homeland Security. And
what's her name?
Well, I don't know if they're going to keep her in charge or not.
She's going to be in charge for a minute.
Because, hold on, to quote a friend, because plot.
You got the hand motion down and everything. That was an homage to Neil over on the Starling Tribune.
But it's like they put her in this position underneath the one guy who was going to like keep her in line and not let her investigate the one thing she wants to investigate. And it's like making somebody vice president. It's the least powerful position in the world, unless something happens to the most powerful position in the world, and then you become the most powerful person in the world. That's exactly what happened with her.
And yeah, now Madani can do, well, she can do her, she can't do whatever she wants, but she could at least investigate things she wants to.
Yep.
And she is investigating. I mean, she sets up the whole training thing at Anvil so she could talk to Billy Russo. She ends up going out to, with drinks with him later. And I see this being a pathway for her to.
It's kind of, it didn't occur to me until now, but there's a lot of parallels to, we see Frank's kind of roundabout interrogation, both with Micro and with what's face, dead guy, Wolf, and her getting information from Russo in a very roundabout way. It's like, oh, I got to do this other thing first and put them off their guard. And then they get the information they want.
By the way, I don't think we've said her name. Her name is Special Agent Dinah Medina.
Madani.
Madani. She is very competent and she knows what she's doing as far as I can tell. She's just continuing her investigation from Afghanistan here in the United States. Now, Haley, you mentioned before the little limerick that was going on with the ferry ride, and we're getting more and more flashbacks from Frank Castle than we have ever in the past. How are you liking that this season? We've got it last episode, we got this episode.
I think it works well for the story they're trying to tell for him. You're seeing him struggling with the death of his family still, so you get flashbacks to that. And then it's a lot of the Punisher story, especially this season, it appears, is about his past in Afghanistan. So you're going to have to see flashbacks to that. There's these investigations that are happening on crimes that happened in the past. You're going to have flashbacks for that. I like all of it. I think it works really well.
And now you have Frank and Micro's relationship, and Frank is just all paranoid and he wants to take Micro out. I think Micro's trying to help him, and there's some comic background here that I just don't have. So, Lauren, what's up with the relationship between Micro and Frank?
So, Micro in the comics is essentially Frank's guy in the chair.
Yeah, well, he's definitely in the chair right now because he's knocked out at the end of the episode.
Yeah, again, I saw it coming. I knew it was coming. Micro knew it was coming. And still, Frank just punches first and then asks questions later. Literally will ask questions later.
It's the start of a beautiful friendship.
It kind of is the thing.
Do you think Micro went about initiating contact with Frank appropriately, or was there a better way to do it?
I'm not sure there was a better way to do it with Frank, but it also wasn't a great way to do it. Frank's paranoid, and Micro's also paranoid. They're just paranoid, and they're both faking their own deaths. Frank doesn't like that Micro's hiding this from his family because Frank's all about family. So that's already putting him on the wrong foot there.
Haley, if you were Micro, how would you have gone about creating the contact?
I think you would have been better off just calling him or talking to him directly in person. Like, Frank's a pretty direct guy, so him being sneaky and circumvent is the exact wrong way to go about it.
But at least this brought Karen Page into the picture. I loved how she was like, I need this article, and she's going through all the boxes, and then the editor comes in and she says, like, I'm looking for this guy Micro. And then conveniently, he's like, I knew this guy, came in, had all these conspiracy theories and mentioned this guy Micro, and there's the article. But we got Karen and the flowers in the window communication system.
I still ship them so hard.
Well, and remember, this is happening right after Matt's death in The Defenders. So Karen is going to feel the need to protect Frank maybe more than she would have before that incident.
Yeah, you can definitely tell Karen's in a kind of fragile place emotionally. I mean, not that she's fragile. It's just that right now she's like, yeah, I need to direct this towards doing something proactive to help someone. I feel kind of at odds and lost and upset. And yeah, she's like, I care for you. At least one of us does. And hugging him and kind of teasing him with the whole you brought flowers thing. Again, I ship them so hard.
This actually makes me want to go back and rewatch everything up to, well, maybe not Iron Fist season one, but everything else. Up
just
to
watch
this point.
The last episode.
There was an episode, I forget which one it was, like eight or so, when they were having the fight over in China at the warehouse.
Okay, watch the last like three episodes.
Yeah. Anyway, it makes me want to go watch them all because you're like, oh, it's Karen and Foggy. And oh, you just reminded me, Matt died at the end of the Defenders. It's like, wow, lots of stuff happened. It's been a good series so far, all these on Netflix. You know,
I'm thinking about it. I believe like half of the Marvel Netflix stuff I haven't watched at this point.
That could be true. Yeah, and it's all time because we've been working on other things here and we've only been able to cover one episode a week. So it just stacks up.
I have no problem watching ahead of you guys. It's just I don't have time to.
You see?
Exactly.
I don't have time either. I don't have a problem watching ahead of you guys. I just, like, not going to happen.
Yeah, I try every year to do a horror movie a month thing in October. I haven't watched a horror movie in 3 days because I haven't had time.
It is October, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, maybe watching The Punisher in October is actually a good idea.
There's a lot of blood.
There's a difference between horror and brutality.
Also true.
Yeah, he actually creates his own blood. I don't know if that was makeup or he actually
no,
cut
he
himself.
No, he had a razor blade.
Okay, so he cut himself. So he created his own blood.
Nobody makes me bleed my own blood. I create my own blood all the time.
Yeah, technically we all create our own blood every second of every day.
Yeah, well, I mean on the outside.
Yes, when he faked the accident, he had the razor blade to make it look authentic in order to get into Sarah Lieberman's house.
Like a wrestler.
I would think Micro would have backed the film up just a little bit to see Frank hiding behind the bushes or something, so he timed it appropriately, and I guess it didn't matter at that point.
Yeah, he knows the whole thing's staged. He doesn't need to see exactly how he did it.
How'd you like going into the Lieberman's house and seeing the kids and Sarah?
On the one hand, it's sweet, and on the other, it's kind of creepy. Like, dude, you faked your death, you're lying to them, and now you're stalking them.
I thought it was interesting how Frank and Sarah bonded, that whole survivor's guilt, you know, and that whole allowing yourself to live after you've lost so much.
Yeah, it's that whole a successful lie is at least partially the truth. And I think that was very much the truth.
Also, I think Frank very much needs to be in therapy.
Yeah, he needs so much therapy.
Kurt has kind of given him a little bit of one-on-one therapy, but he's not actually in the group. I think in the group would be better for him.
Like, there's only so much you can do with somebody who won't admit they need help.
Has he admitted he doesn't need help? I think he does need help. He just...
Well, they won't actively try, is the thing.
Like, you can't help somebody that doesn't want to accept help.
Yeah. Frank will, like, only go so far and then back off.
Yeah, Frank does talk to Kurt in this episode a little bit. And Kirk actually helps him track Micro. So, friendship.
Stalker friendship.
True friendship is asking somebody to meet somebody that you're stalking in a graveyard.
I ask that of all my friends.
Right?
Haley, do you have anything else for this episode that struck you?
That struck me? Let's go back to the payphone for a second. Who even has quarters with them anymore to use a payphone? I don't carry cash.
I don't carry cash, but every now and then I will end up with random quarters from like using a tollway or...
Right, but then those just end up sitting on like your bedroom dresser, never to be seen again.
Also true.
At the end of the payphones, they used to have actual slots for credit cards.
Then again, now that I think about it, Frank can't use presumably can't use a card or something. Since he's faked his own death, he's living kind of like a ghost. So I imagine for him, it's as many cash transactions as possible.
Right. But he also has a fake ID, like a fake passport and everything under the name Pete, whatever.
True. But you still don't want to leave too much of a paper trail.
Yeah. He doesn't have anybody that is swiping up his electrons yet. And I assume that's what Micro is going to do. So maybe Pete Castelloni is going to be more capable of doing that stuff once Frank hooks up with Micro. And that actually, my moment that's similar to yours, but different, is the whole car for Micro. I'm thinking he's been dead for a year. How has he registered the car?
That car is not registered. He paid cash for that thing.
Yeah. He paid cash. He paid like $300 cash from somebody who was selling it and hasn't got it registered. Maybe got it inspected by somebody who looked the other way, if that.
I don't know in New York what the process is. I'm guessing there's an inspection and a registration that has to be done annually. And I think you can go into the system and change that, but you still actually need the stickers to throw on the plates. Otherwise, you're going to get pulled over.
He could have those delivered to a PO box if he's like going in the system to change the registration and everything.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Or if you know somebody, you can get those.
There's always somebody on the take.
Yeah. Like, seriously, it's so easy to kind of learn how to slip underneath the system. All you got to do is be willing to do it. Google how to disappear.
What does Micro do for money?
He puts a bunch of zeros and ones into his bank account.
Yeah. That's probably what it is. Something like that, or I don't know, dark web stuff. I don't know.
All right.
Or yeah, he's getting paid to do that for other people too. Like, go in the system and change their DMV records and fake deaths and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, he found that nice warehouse with like the danger signs with like radioactive or bio waste or whatever. And he's got a nice setup in there.
Reminded me a little bit of the Arrow Cave with the circular thing in the middle and everything.
Love their own things.
All right, Michelle, what do you have for the episode that we haven't covered yet?
I think it's great. Frank finally shaves off the beard. You get clean shaven Frank. None of that. I love the whole hipster joke and how he was like, I was thinking about doing the man bun.
I like that he has a sense of humor.
He has a sense of humor. It just seems to come out very rarely and sometimes at weird times.
Yeah.
So Lauren, anything else for you?
So first of all, if you don't want to be spoiled, do not look up Billy Russo or watch any of the other Punisher movies. And Ben Barnes, it's so fun seeing him. I first saw him in the second Chronicles of Narnia movie. And now he's on Westworld, where he's just being kind of like this, actually. Here he's some sort of like not at all Blackwater guy.
I need to catch up with Westworld. I got halfway through the first season and that was it.
Yeah, again, time. I don't know. It's what after Chronicles of Narnia, I was like, oh, and he's in Seventh Son, which is a terrible, terrible, terrible movie in which he's like tremendously miscast. But then again, so is kind of everyone in that movie. His acting's been much better recently. And I'm looking forward to seeing more of him in this series, given what I know about that character.
He pulled it off pretty well inside the bar so far. So he's not, what is his name in Iron Fist? Oh, gosh, the CEO brother.
Wade.
Wade.
He's not a Wade.
No. Here he reminds me a lot of the character he plays in Westworld, that sort of charming, but kind of, of course, then again, that might be my own preconceptions about everything, including seeing him on Westworld and everything. So,
okay.
But yeah, Ben Barnes, woo, good looking dude.
So I enjoyed this episode a lot more than the previous episode, and it had to do with, I guess, the way the previous episode ended. Oh my gosh. And we'll see what happens from here. And the next episode we're covering is The Punisher, which is episode 3 of the season, Kandahar. I'm looking forward to that, and we'll just take it how it goes. In the meantime, Michelle, people are looking for another great show with more geeky content that they can go out and listen to. What would you recommend for them?
Well, we have the Starling Tribune, which is a CW Network Arrow television show fan podcast. In episode 213, The Good, the Bad, and the Cuddling. The reporters Stargate Pioneer Michelle and Chris review the Legends of Tomorrow Season 3 finale episode, The Good, the Bad, and the Cuddling, and discuss some recent news surrounding the DC Comics-based CW superhero shows. The reporters enjoy the best episode of the season, keying in on Captain Rip Hunter's ultimate sacrifice, all the help the Legends received from their friends, Mick Roy's worst intimate experience ever, and the massive amounts of cuddles Bebo needs. Again, that is the Starlight Tribune, episode 213.
Bebo needs cuddles. We're going to move on into the news.
If you run in similar circles as I do, this has been all over your social media feed for the last couple days. Chuck Wendig has been fired from Marvel Comics.
Okay, so this is technically from the Star Wars division of Marvel Comics, but seeing as this has a lot of similarities to the James Gunn firing, I kind of figured it was worth talking about. Chuck Wendig is an author who I pretty much like, and he's done a lot of work for Star Wars in the past couple of years. He did some novels, and recently he was going to write for the comics. He was going to do Shadow of Vader. He'd written the first three, and then this past week he was taken off issues 4 and 5, and also taken off of an as yet unannounced, he says, book. He means Star Wars title. He's still working for LFL, the books. So on his blog, terribleminds.com, he goes and tells exactly what happened. He says that it's a Marvel decision, not an LFL decision. The editor said he made the call. He seemed genuinely upset at my tweet and profanity. Okay, the thing is, earlier this year, there was sort of an editor reshuffling at Marvel. And in early summer, now there's a new editor at the Star Wars division. Chuck Wendig has never been particularly shy about his politics and about having a filthy mouth. In fact, the very first book I ever read from him was a book called Blackbirds, and the main character, Miriam, has a really filthy mouth. That's cool, so do I when I'm not on this podcast. But because he's so outspoken about his politics, ComicsGate, which is basically Gamergate but for comics, has been trying to get him fired. Star Wars fandom has been kind of a bad place recently. There are a lot of the really racist stuff about Kelly Marie Tran, the actress who plays Rose in the movies, is one of the symptoms of this. And the fact that the tweets that the editor linked aren't what I would call either profane or violent or anything like that. It seems like it's just more fanboy appeasement. When we talked about the James Gunn thing, we said this could be the start of a dangerous precedent, and I think that we are seeing that through. I saw it described as culture of appeasement, and it seems like a pretty good term. You have these very loud, angry people who are appropriating the language of people who do have genuine grievances. It's these people who are trying to take people who are not doing anything particularly offensive and trying to make a big deal out of it because they don't like their politics. It's not like the whole, you know, Roseanne racist tweets. This is just him saying the politics in this country right now are not great. Vote.
Yeah. And the thing that people don't like about him is his politics. But the thing that they're going to say they don't like right now is that, oh, he used the F word or something like that. And, like, clearly that's not what they care about.
We don't know, just saying, we don't know what kind of counseling he received to maintain his employment, or anybody at Marvel or Disney right now. They might have had a whole company shift, and this is something that hasn't been reported, and we don't know it as far as their public PR goes, and we just don't know. I mean, that could be it.
From what it sounds like, there was none. And I would like to point out that the guy who turned Captain America into a Nazi is still employed by Marvel, and there is still a lot of, if you look up Comicsgate right now, there are still a lot of people who are being very violently anti-minority. The editor-in-chief at Marvel pretended to be an Asian man to get around guidelines at Marvel so he could get stuff published. And yet this is what gets somebody let go. I know he was a contractor, but still, that's not a good look, Marvel.
Yeah, we'll have to wait until the next thing that comes along happens, because you know it's going to. I don't know what people can do to stop it other than stop buying the books. I know I have stopped buying a lot of Marvel books just because I'm not getting anything out of them right now.
The comic book industry is kind of a dying industry right now. It's being propped up by its relationship to movie and television. They're appeasing this fan base that they feel beholden to, but there's a wider fan base out there they could be working for.
And it's a huge shame, because comics can be fantastic and fun and innovative. And, you know, you could be bringing in all of these new fans. And instead you have these very vocal, well, I remember it being like this. And you're sort of seeing that right now in cartoons too, with the new Thundercats that's getting ready to come out. Oh, this isn't like I remember it in 1983. Therefore, it's terrible and should be canceled. It's not for you. This is to bring in children. This is to bring in a new generation. Just accept the fact that sometimes things are not for you and move on. I say as I complain about everything.
And the rebooted Thundercats, like, what was that, 8-9 years ago?
It was in 2011. It was fantastic. There's a wonderful voice cast. The art was amazing. It was great stories. And it was canceled because no one watched it.
That's a shame, because it was a really good series. I'm not a Thundercats fan, but that was a good series to watch.
Oh, I'm very much a Thundercats fan. I grew up on Thundercats, and I loved that show. And yeah, I was so upset when it was canceled. But this new one, it looks like a lot of fun. But again, because, oh, the art style's ugly and it looks like it's for kids. Meh. Yes, it's for kids. And with these comics, Chuck Wendig, oh, he brought gays into Star Wars. Guess what? Gay people like Star Wars too.
And they exist. Like, you can't pretend like gay people don't exist just because it makes you uncomfortable. If you're creating a universe, it's weird to create one without gay people. Like, that's sending a very particular message.
You have a universe with slug people. I'm pretty sure gay people can exist.
When Donald Glover hosted Saturday Night Live, he had this great skit of all the black people in the universe. And there was like four people in there. And he's like, I was looking for even like a black planet and didn't find one.
Yeah. And that's another thing, because there are in the expanded universe a lot more black characters, a lot more Asian characters, which I know people will be like, oh, you can't say they're, you know, black or Asian or whatever because it's in space. Yeah. But they are very clearly,
they're not white.
Yeah, they are not white. They are very clearly meant to look like this ethnic group from Earth, therefore giving this kid on Earth somebody to relate to.
You know, Lauren, you were recently on a great episode of In Defense Of, talking about anime and cartoons and how they have developed and everything. And you said something that I didn't even think of at the time, but Ezra's not white. Star Wars Rebels, and I didn't even think of that.
No, Ezra is very clearly coded as, I would say, like Middle Eastern. I mean, maybe that's because he's Space Aladdin in the first season, definitely. And we always used to joke like, shut up, Aladdin. But no, he is very clearly coded as not white. He has darker skin. He has kind of a broader nose. You look at his parents, they also have that kind of darker skin. And even Kanan, again, coded as, I would say, more Hispanic looking, probably as a tribute to the voice actor Freddie Prinze Jr., who is Puerto Rican. And Sabine, who is very clearly coded as Asian. Again, her voice actress is, I think, Bengali.
All great characters. That's my point.
Yes. And again, it's something that you're seeing more of right now in Star Wars Resistance. The main character, coded as Asian. His father, played by a really fantastic Asian actor. the actor who voices him is Japanese American. And you're seeing more and more great opportunities for these actors and actresses who've never had the chance before to see themselves on screen be the person that they wanted to see on screen. And right now in fiction, you're seeing the chance for these people who never had the chance to see themselves in these franchises, write for these people who also never saw themselves in these franchises, whether they're somebody who is, you know, of a different skin color or gay or in a non-traditional relationship, whatever that is.
Just wish it was embraced more.
Yeah. And the thing is, most of the fandom does embrace it. There's just this very small, very vocal, very hateful portion that doesn't. And it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous that these huge corporations or companies are bending over backwards to appease this tiny vocal minority. Like, that's the part that doesn't make sense. It's not like they're boycotting things in a way that's going to hurt the bottom line. They're not that big of a group. They're not that powerful.
Yeah, they need to do kind of what LFL is doing right now, Lucasfilms Limited is doing. And it's just kind of like, oh, that's nice. We're going to keep doing things our own way and continue employing these people that they want to employ, continue doing the casting that they want to do, and not employing the people who, they're not rewarding bad behavior, essentially. What you do is you don't reward bad behavior.
I don't know if this is true or not, but I read it on the internet, so I'm going to share a story. Back when Captain America was first released, there's a picture of him punching Adolf Hitler on the cover. And American Nazis at the time protested outside of Marvel's offices. And Jack Kirby rolled up his sleeves and went downstairs to punch them. I don't know if that's true. I don't care if it's true. It's a good story.
According to Jack Kirby's biography, and according to Stan Sakai, who is the creator of the comic Usagi Yojimbo, I mean, they say it's true.
There you go.
I want that to be true. Jack Kirby was Jewish. A lot of the people who worked at Marvel Comics at the time were Jewish. And years later, Kirby told an interviewer, I once got a letter from a Nazi who told me to pick out any lamppost I wanted on Times Square because when Hitler arrived, they'd hang me from it. It was typical of a genre of fans who have long since died out. Sadly, not so much these days. But yeah, Stan Sakai, we went to a few parties when Fantagraphics was in Angora. It was at one of those that I first met Jack Kirby and listened to his war stories. I met Jack many times after that, and he always told his war stories. There were different stories, but it always ended with him killing four Nazis. He hated Nazis.
Remember when that was like an acceptable thing to say? You could say you hated Nazis and nobody would be like, you can't say that.
Yeah, you could say, go punch Nazis. People are like, oh, have you tried talking with them?
Good people on both sides.
Punch Nazis.
Punch Nazis.
My official opinion here is punch Nazis.
Can we get that on a t-shirt?
Yeah, my grandfather actually was afraid that Nazis from Germany would invade America. And so he was making sure that I knew all Nazis were evil to be prepared to pick up arms against them. And unfortunately, they're not from Germany. My grandfather in my head would be like, what is going on? Like, I can't go kill them, Grandpa. I'm sorry. I'll be thrown in prison.
Somebody write a comic where a bunch of 90-year-old World War II vets go kick the ass of some modern-day American Nazis. Oh, I will please buy the shit out of that.
Make a TV show, something.
Inglourious Bastards, but old.
Yeah, there was a movie called Gran Torino that was kind of like that.
Yeah, but then you have to deal with all the anti-Asian racism first.
Yeah.
Okay, true. I mean, it wasn't Nazis. It was Asian gang members.
Yeah, no, I want it to be like 90-year-old war vets fighting 20-year-old Nazis.
Yeah, 20-year-old Proud Boys.
Yes.
And khakis holding their tiki torches.
Tiki torches.
Jack Kirby would want you to punch Nazis.
Listen, Indy and Captain America and Wonder Woman have taught me one thing, and that is to punch Nazis.
So I think we can all agree on that. We have news that's not related to that, though.
Speaking of fists, Iron Fist has been canceled at Netflix. To which we all say, okay.
So what was that you were saying, SP, that the episode you just published that was the one where we were just talking about how, oh, apparently it's good now.
Yeah, so Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode 253 is being published tonight as we were recording this. And in that, we received a lot of feedback from people that have seen Iron Fist Season 2 and said, actually, it's gotten a lot better. It's pretty good. And we were looking forward to watching it sometime next year. We probably still will. And unfortunately, in the intermeeting time since we recorded that episode and this week, it's been canceled. Now, I think that this is a signal of the Disney streaming service, and they're slowly ramping down their Disney presence on Netflix and moving as much as they can over.
It's a Netflix show, but I'd imagine Netflix has made the decision that of all the shows they have available, this one is not that popular. They would rather get another season of Luke Cage in, or another season of Jessica Jones, one of their shows that is more popular.
I don't know if Disney's going to allow it. I mean, they're going
to
stop.
They have to. They don't own these shows.
These are Netflix shows. Disney would have to shell out a lot of money to Netflix to get them back.
Apparently, the statement from Disney says, while the series on Netflix has ended, the immortal Iron Fist will live on. We don't know if that means they might do a cartoon. We don't know if that means that they might start buying up the rights to the Defenders again and start airing them on their streaming service.
Or maybe the character is just going to be integrated into the other series.
Into Luke Cage. I think that's a better use for him.
And we get the Daughters of the Dragon show.
Again, with Disney streaming service, yeah,
I don't think they're going to be making any new shows on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if they could do, just the Power Man and Iron Fist show, that would be pretty fun.
Yeah, but the Disney streaming service isn't supposed to show anything that's R, but of course they're doing that, man, they're doing that Star Wars Bounty Hunter show. So what is that going to be? A PG-13 Bounty Hunter show?
Yes, probably, because there hasn't been a rated R Star Wars thing.
And they can make streaming channels that require 18 and over to watch.
Well, Disney would have to change its stance then, because they said publicly that there's no R-rated stuff that's going to be on the streaming service.
We'll see. Money speaks louder than anything else.
I can see them wanting to keep everything at about a PG-13 level, though. PG-13 or lower.
In which case, either way, the Defenders series long-term is not, it doesn't have a future. They might run for another year or two, but as the Disney streaming service ramps up, I just don't see these series being supported.
Well, it's a Netflix decision because they're Netflix shows.
I think a good run for any TV show is about 5 seasons anyways. Daredevil's already at 3 when the new season comes out.
4 if you count Defenders.
Yeah, Luke Cage and Jessica Jones are at 2 each, and you could say a bonus season of Defenders. So I would say they've probably only got a couple years left in them anyways.
I don't know if they're going to fold into the other shows. I don't know. Again, I don't know what they're planning to do, but it was kind of inevitable that if any of the shows were going to go, it would be Iron Fist first.
Right now, they're on about a 2 years between season release schedule because of how many shows they have. I think this is a good decision for them. Like, drop a show that's not that popular, roll the characters from it into one of the other shows, and be able to release more frequently the shows that are popular. But in happier news, Ryan Coogler has been signed on to write and direct Black Panther 2.
Yay! Yes. So we all kind of knew this was going to happen, and now it's official. Apparently, it's going to start production either late 2019 or early 2020. And Coogler is also developing the drama Wrong Answer with Michael B. Jordan and executive producing LeBron James's Space Jam sequel.
I'm excited about that.
I am so excited, even if I think it should be Space Jam, but anime and with Michael B. Jordan as the human.
But how is he going to jam?
At over 9,000? No, you put him in like one of those sports animes. Like, have him be on Yuri on Ice. No, there's like basketball animes.
Okay.
But yeah, because Michael B. Jordan is a huge anime fan. It would be great. But in any case, yes, Space Jam. I kind of want to watch it again now.
I watch it every few months anyways.
It's so good. The soundtrack's amazing.
Here's your chance. Do your dance at the Space Jam. All right. More movie news. Scarlett Johansson is getting paid big time for a Black Widow movie.
She is getting $15 million for the Black Widow movie. The salary is what Chris Evans and Chris Hemsworth each earned for playing Cap and Thor in Infinity War. That's a lot.
Suck it, gender pay gap.
And if you look at what everyone else made for the movies, it's quite a lot. Chadwick Boseman got $2 million for Black Panther. Brie Larson is getting $5 million for Captain Marvel. Robert Downey Jr., he got $500,000 for the first Iron Man, but now he gets something like $10 million base plus, I think it's, we were looking this over before we started, 2.5% of the back end.
Which 2.5% of $1 billion is quite a bit.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
All I got to say is $15 million is more than Chris Pine got for the last Star Trek movie, which is about $6 million. So you go, girl.
Mm-hmm. But then again, they've been making these movies for like 10 years. So they know this is a solid thing. So they know they're going to be getting their money back.
They've been making Star Trek for 10 years now, too.
Yeah, but I don't think the Star Trek movies make as much money as the Marvel movies do.
No,
yeah.
They don't.
And I think that is it for news.
That is the news.
And now for some feedback. On Twitter, there was an exchange about how Karen is the MVP of the MCU.
There's an artist I follow, at My2K, who started, okay, there was this unpopular opinion comic book movie edition thing, and they said, the Netflix Punisher series is one of the best TV programs of all time. I'm not exaggerating. And I let them know that we're starting our episode by episode watch through. And I mentioned that I can never overstate how amazing Jon Bernthal is, to which they replied, Karen is the MVP of the MCU, though. This is undisputed. Which, I do love Karen. Karen is amazing.
I love Claire.
Claire is also amazing. And I did respond that I want just like an episode of Karen and Claire just having drinks and sharing gossip about the drama llamas of the MCU.
What about Foggy Bear? Foggy Bear needs to show up too.
He's also a bit of a drama llama, though.
Yeah, a little.
Sometimes.
And at Mr. Paraclete supports a swapped cameo plan.
So this is from Tumblr. Just Shower Thought says, when Stan Lee leaves us all, Deadpool should do cameos in all Marvel movies in place of him. Garnet Made Me Gay says, complete with fake mustache, aviators, and a gray wig on top of his suit, of course. To which Danny Is Not On Fire replied, bold of you to assume Stan Lee can die. I, too, support this temporary swapped cameo plan, Mr. Paracletes.
I don't know. I think Haley would actually agree with Dan Is Not On Fire.
I just thought we weren't allowed to talk about Stan Lee dying at all. Like, we're not allowed to even entertain the thought that it could happen.
Even if the news reports it, it didn't happen. It's like comics. Even if there's a body, there's a 90% chance they'll be back.
He'll get better.
But exactly. Sitwell. Sitwell will be back.
Except for Sitwell. Sitwell's all the way dead.
Nobody stays dead in comics except Uncle Ben and Bucky Barnes, and both of them came back.
Well, shucks.
Uncle Ben always dies again, though.
That's also true.
Yeah.
But Bucky's still alive.
Got better.
They always get better. And at Andy Minga had some words to say about Iron Fist.
In response to Iron Fist being canceled, after the second season, the crossing fingers it will be picked up by the Disney streaming or some other service. And we just discussed that, but yeah, we'll see how it plays out.
We will indeed. And apparently we'll be viewing from the trunk because we're going to ride the trunk.
We're going to trunk monkey this one out.
That's right. Totally forgot about Haley having a trunk monkey. Thank you, listener, for staying with us and in this great hiatus of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And we look forward to the June 2019 premiere.
Thank you to everybody who sends us feedback and sends us fun things that make you think of us. We really love hearing from you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you to everyone that let us know that Iron Fist is good just in time for it to get canceled.
Yes, and thank you for sharing your thoughts about whether or not it's going to the streaming service or not. As you can tell, we Even we are not sure what's going to be going on.
No, indeed. And thanks, by the way, for everybody that's checking us out on Periscope, which we stream to now. You can get to it on Twitter.
Also, PSA, do not ride in a car's trunk. Just don't.
Listen, sometimes you don't have a lot of choices.
I mean, sometimes you're trying to sneak into a drive-thru. Drive-in.
Those exist?
Both. They do.
Yeah, it's right next to the payphone.
Yeah.
Until next time, I'm Director SB.
I'm Agent Haley.
I'm Agent Lauren.
And I'm Consultant Michelle.
Bye.
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 Thank you for listening. If you want to leave us feedback, go to gunnageek.com and you will find all our contact information and other shows. You can also visit legendsofshield.com where you'll find our complete archive of podcasts. The music heard on this podcast is by Kevin MacLeod, found at incompetech.com and also artists on pond5.com and audiojungle.net. The opinions heard on this podcast are those of the individual hosts and do not represent Stargate Pioneer Productions, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., or Gunna Geek. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the property of the Disney Corporation, Marvel Studios, and ABC. No infringement is intended.
Kind of funny, the episode that's going to post tonight, right after you had done with this one, we talk about how Iron Fist Season 2 is going to be better.
Oh, yeah, we're timely.
I'm getting better. I'm working on the next one.
I just mean it's just really funny. That's what everybody was saying with this news. It's like, but it was so good.
Right.
I had a nightmare the other night that I recorded a really long chapter of an audiobook and then I played it back and it was nothing but echoes.
Lauren, I was explaining to Michelle earlier, it's kind of funny that the episode that's going to drop tonight, we gush and talk about all the great feedback that we got from different people saying Iron Fist Season 2 is the best ever.
It just got canceled.
Yeah.
Always how it works.
15 million for a Black Widow movie. What the That's low.
It's still higher than like all of her female co-stars.
How much did Wonder Woman get paid? Do we know? The Gal Gadot?
I think 3.
Oh my God.
I think so. Yeah, Gal Gadot.
Didn't Robert Downey Jr. get like 50?
Received $300,000 for her role in Wonder Woman, but that does not include box office bonuses that are likely included in her contract.
Oh, okay. I'm pretty sure at one point in time, Robert Downey Jr. got 50 mil for one of those movies. Now, he renegotiated, but he was at 50 mil.
Well, that's because he's the OG.
Still.
For the first movie, he was paid $500,000.
Okay.
For the second one, 10 million. And I think it's gone up.
I think his actual pay went down, but he got a high percentage of the receipts. And it might have been one of the Avengers movies.
Avengers Onwards. He's renegotiated to get 2.5% of profit plus a base salary of $10 million per movie.
Yeah, but that was after the renegotiation, yeah.
Yeah, for Avengers, he gets $10 million plus $29 million in profit, so that's $39 million. Iron Man 3 got a total of $32 million. Age of Ultron, total of $35 million.
But that's even more than Chris Evans, because Chris Evans, I don't think, has that type of deal.
Yeah, I know. I heard that he helped a lot of his co-stars renegotiate.
Oh, yeah. I remember talking about that. It was like a year. It was before the last Avengers movie, I think.
Yeah, Brie Larson is getting paid $5 million for Captain Marvel. And she was reportedly paid more than other newcomers to the franchise because she signed a 7-picture deal.
Yeah. I could see $5 million first time out. I could see that. And as you pointed out, that's more than Wonder Woman.
Even though she is getting a percentage. But yeah, it's still like, women get paid so significantly less than men. Yay!
It was kind of funny. I'm behind. Okay, I admit it. But I've had a lot going on the last week of my TV watching. But I did watch the Doctor Who premiere.
I still haven't seen it.
They did two viewings. They did, you know, the worldwide premiere, and then they did another premiere later on, which I'm in the middle of. But in the middle of the commercials for the extended version, they have Jodie Whittaker actually at New York Comic Con, and they take snippets from her panel there. And that was one of the questions that she was asked, was, how do you like this role in the midst of everything going on? And the questioner didn't say the Me Too movement, but it was obviously referring to the Me Too movement and everything.
Yeah.
And she answered with class. She also indicated that all great female characters are flawed. And I would argue any great character would be flawed.
Yes, exactly. But there's this whole thing where it's like, for a while there is like, oh, all like right now with gay characters too, where it's like,
the last ship pissed me off on that. Get me back to that later.
People really overcompensated by making these characters perfect. And it was like, you couldn't have somebody who was like just a scumbag or just a villain or something. It was always like, it had to be a thing because there were so few of these characters, you had to be, it was like you were the representation, and you were the, like, you were representing that community, so you kind of had to be perfect. So now there's so many female characters out there that you can be flawed. And right now in the gay community, there's a lot of that, oh, there's a gay villain. And it's like, yeah, now that we actually have enough gay characters where you can actually have a gay villain. And it's not like it was back in the 50s where villains were gay coded because everyone was so scared of gay people. Now it's just like, oh, here is a gay villain who just happens to be a bad person and also gay, but that's not why they're a bad person. Or here is like the gay best friend who just happens to be the best friend, but it's not because they're gay. And it's a thing in representation. It's like the stages of representation.
Thanks for the entertaining catfight during your monologue.
What did I do? I missed it.
Yeah, you had a catfight by the doors behind you.
Oh, God. Yeah, I'm trying to leave Pike out because he was behaving himself for a bit. And we'll see if he continues to do so, if he needs to go back to his bedroom.
Dude's got a lot of energy.
We were going to get him neutered on Thursday, but then we were like, oh, but this is the last weekend of the state fair. And to be fair, he isn't quite 6 months old yet, so we can afford to, you know, push it back another week. So we're getting him neutered next Wednesday.
So Steven is getting a new puppy, and he would have gotten it today or this weekend, but they're keeping it to be neutered. I forget where they're getting it from. Might be a shelter. It is a mutt. It's not a pure breed or anything. But then I asked how old it was, and it was like 8 weeks old. I'm like, whoa, that is early.
It might be some shelters, they won't let you take them home until they've been neutered, which I know with Scott, that caused a problem with like a cat they adopted because it was neutered too young.
Yeah.
Tonks, I think, was about 4 months old when he was neutered. And Pike, our vet, wants to do it at 6 months. And right now he's about 5 months.
Yeah. So somewhere between 4 and 6 or 8 months is usually when you do it so that the animal can have those hormones when they're growing and so they can mature properly.
Well, you don't want to get them done when they're fully maturing. Like 6 months is kind of the limit because after that, they do start to get those instincts like the spraying, the territorialness, the aggression. But like, you also don't want them to be too young because they're so small and they might react badly to anesthesia. And there's like, that was the whole reason that with Pike, they didn't want to do surgery on his leg if it hadn't been healing, was because he weighed about 1 pound at the time.
Yeah.
And that's like, if he had weighed any less, there is no way they could have done surgery. Like he was barely at the limit for surgery. But luckily he was healing. And now I was feeling him the other day. There's a little bump on his leg and it's like, oh, that's where your leg healed.
To finish my thought, by the way, on The Last Ship, they have had this character that's been on the show from season one. I think they're in season three right now. And then all of a sudden she ends up being gay this year. Okay, I get it. But then like 2-3 episodes in, her girlfriend, who came out of the blue anyway, the girlfriend ends up being an enemy agent and stabs her and kills her.
Ugh.
I'm like,
oh, kill you gotta gays.
Gotta love the bury the gays and kill the lesbians trope.
to be fair, there's a lot of death and destruction in this season, but I mean, to use that, I was not happy. This is the last season, so whatever.
I'm looking at a picture of two very fat raccoons eating food off of their tummies.
It's a picture of a pregnant squirrel.
Oh, that has to be so fat. Have you seen a picture of the pregnant guinea pig that looks like a coconut with a face?
No, I can imagine it, but no.
It's so good. Yeah, these two very fat raccoons are sitting in chairs and eating like dog kibble off of their tummies, and it's fantastic. And their little tails are dangling down, and they're just being fat and happy, and it's like my life goals right there.
Okay. I am recording the video this week.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I
didn't even do my hair.
Can't wait to edit that one from last week.
And are trying to, I'm sorry if I'm stuttering a lot. My cat has stolen a bag of yarn and is trying to eat through it. So that's a lighthearted thing that's happening right now.
Arrow premieres tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Charmed is tonight.
Yeah.
Tonight.
I don't have time to watch it.
Yeah, I'm going to let a few episodes of Charmed run to see if it's worth watching or not.
Yeah, same. I so loved the original, but like, I don't know. This one could be good.
It could be. It could also be a train wreck, and I'm not going to waste time on it if it is.
Agreed.
So you are taking SP's show advice a little bit, and you are not watching.
I'm not going to give it three seasons, but I'm going to give it like three episodes. Badger watching it.
Yeah.
Before I put my time in.
Yeah, I'm going to give it like three episodes of,
The internet will let us know if it's good or bad. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what shows are you looking forward to, Haley?
I don't even know what's coming out.
Doctor Who came out.
I know all the shows came back last week, and I haven't watched any yet.
Not all of them. Supergirl didn't.
No, I mean, just in general, television started back up last week.
Yeah. I've been watching Last Man Standing, and that's actually been pretty good, although you can tell it's been majorly changed. A couple characters they got rid of and stuff. So other than that, a lot of people are watching it. 16 million people are watching it. So
yeah.
Oh, I am shocked. Apparently Ariana Grande and Pete Davidson split.
Oh, shocked.
Oh, wow.
Oh my gosh. I am stunned.
Ariana Grande is available. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, you got a shot. Get in there. Go for it, champ.
Sweet. She's 25. It's like half my age.
Okay. Yeah, we all know the correct the minimum age for you to date is half your age plus three.
I thought it was plus seven.
Plus seven.
Plus seven? Plus seven. Yeah. Half your age plus seven.
Don't ruin my fantasy.
Lauren's got to go break up with some boyfriends now.
I prefer the one a friend of mine thought up in college. Figure the minimum cultural touchstone that you're comfortable with them not knowing about.
Who loves orange soda?
My cousin Allison is in a relationship. Her daughter's father is 6 years younger than her. And was 4 years old when Lion King came out. And she's cool with that, but I'm not sure I would be if I was in a relationship with anyone who was that young when Lion King came out. I don't know. I definitely couldn't be with anybody who wasn't alive when Lion King came out.
What year did Lion King come out?
1993 or 1994.
Okay.
Well, let's put it this way. Ariana Grande is the same age as my older daughter.
Oof. Awkward.
That's weird.
Yeah, that's really comfortable.
I'm not the only one that does it.
I know, and it's got to be awkward for them too. Well, there's a romance series I really love, and it's it was kind of written as a take that against 50 Shades of Grey. And one of the things in it is it's older man, younger woman, you know, age gap relationship. And one of the things is she finds out that she's about the same age as his daughter. And it's really awkward for everyone at first. And then they kind of, after a few years, start to get used to it. And then the guy's daughter dies and it's horribly sad. It's a fantastic series.
Way to sell it, Lauren.
It's fantastic sex, and every book makes me cry because the emotions are so good.
Okay, that's a better sales pitch.
Okay, look up Abigail Barnett's The Boss series. They are fantastic.
All right, we'll do.
I probably won't.
Before you got here, Haley, we were all talking about getting down to 40 or something. So it hasn't gotten under 90 yet where you are?
Yeah, it's 77 right now, actually. It rained a lot yesterday, so temperature's down. But it's probably humid outside. I don't know. I haven't been outside.
Outside's overrated.
I spent yesterday at the beach.
I was supposed to spend yesterday at a taco fest, but the rain, so we went to a taco shop instead.
I mean, you still got tacos.
And then we did an escape room, and we totally escaped. And after we got out, they were like, oh, yeah, that's our second hardest room. And we're like, really? That wasn't hard at all.
I want to go to an escape room someday.
You've never done it?
No.
Oh, yeah.
You will love it.
Yeah. We did it for work.
I'm 3 for 3 right now.
There's one that just opened up near us.
You might not actually be that challenged, but the fun part is trying to work with everybody to actually get it done. And everybody's got their own ideas on how to do it, stuff like that.
So. We would have won ours, okay? But see, at the beginning, they were like, don't do this to our equipment. Don't take anything apart, blah, 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 blah. And then the last thing that we had to do was take apart the walkie-talkie they gave us, which is their property. And they gave us this huge, long speech at the beginning about not destroying their property. And then we were all standing there going, but you told us not to destroy your property. And it's like, you.
Okay, there's the one that just opened up near us has two rooms. There's the curse and death row.
I think both are right up your alley.
Yeah, the evil spirit of urban legend fame has trapped another unsuspecting group inside a dank room. With just 60 minutes on the clock, you'll have to move fast if you hope to escape its clutches. And the other one is in the final minutes before a switch is flipped, inmates feverishly puzzle through the remaining clues to prove their innocence. They'll have to discover who framed them and why. Okay, either of these looks really fun.
There's one that's like 10 minutes away from my apartment that has like 10 rooms.
This one's in the same place where I found that turtle.
The one we did last night was a steampunk room. So it's like the guy built a time machine and then got stuck in the wrong time with a broken time machine. So you had to rebuild the time machine for him and like figure out his journey through time. This one.
So either Timeless or Doc Brown.
Kinda.
Did you watch the last season, Timeless, Haley?
Not yet. It's on the list.
It's on their app, I guess.
I mean, I have the episodes. I just haven't had a chance to watch them yet.
I haven't seen it either. It's on my list of streaming shows. And I haven't gotten to that yet.
I have so much stuff to watch.
I know. That's why one of the reasons I'm not interested in picking up new series that, like, for instance, Charmed. If it's not going to be good, I'm not going to watch it. I need good shows. I'm getting older, guys. My time is limited. Like, on Earth, my time is limited. Can't waste it with stuff like that. Who's cosplaying for Halloween?
Yo, I need to figure out is what.
I'm going to be Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Nice.
Nice.
That is nice. How do you cosplay Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
It's not cosplay. It's just a costume.
Like, yeah, but like robe and...
Yeah, the robe and the little doily thing around the neck. And like you pull your hair back in a really tight bun, wear the glasses, and you carry a gavel.
Okay.
And you become a badass.
Yeah. So some Chinese company made a sexy Ruth Bader Ginsburg costume, and it's just a Ruth Bader Ginsburg costume.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I guess. I need a mad scientist costume. I haven't been able to pull that one on together yet. Broadcast has been successfully terminated by the Punisher.
Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is copyright 2018.